this is a struggle for me. I have to do this. I know I have to do this to make the business work, but how do I do it? And I think the issue is you've got to absolutely plan it in advance and then you have to execute. You can't have a, you know, the old saying is like an 80% plan, 100% executed is better than 100% plan that's 80% executed. So you've got to get out there and you've got to actually execute.
You're listening to Be That Lawyer, life-changing strategies and resources for growing a successful law practice. Each episode, your host, author, and lawyer coach, Steve Fritzen, will take a deeper dive, helping you grow your law practice in less time with greater results. Now, here's your host, Steve Fritzen.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to Be That Lawyer. I am Steve Fritzen, as the announcer mentioned, and it is another beautiful day here in Chicago. If you're somewhere warm, you can go suck an egg. It's getting cold here, but we love our fall and we relish in the color changes. And now that's gone. All the leaves are dead. So not to be too depressing right from the get-go, we're gonna pump things up. We're gonna have a lot of fun today. We're gonna have a lot of great takeaways for you to be that lawyer, someone that is confident, organized, and a skilled rainmaker. I've got Denny in the wings. How's it going, Denny?
Good. I'm in Arizona, so it's warmer here.
You're one of those people I want to punch you through the screen.
Yeah, I know. Sorry.
There you go.
It's 60 and we got sweaters on, so.
All right. So yeah. So suck it. It's 60 degrees and you're miserable. 60 for us, as you know, from being in Chicago, and it's that's a pleasure. We love our 60s.
Shorts weather.
It's shorts weather. Obviously, want to take a moment to thank our sponsors. We've got MoneyPenny, we've got Legalese, and we've got Practice Panther, and you can hear their very engaging ads and offers coming up soon in the show. Denny was so kind as to send me a really good quote of the show, which is a Dale Carnegie special, as I like to call it. It's 99% of what I worried about never happened. Well, that just defined my wife's life. I mean, my wife comes from a long lineage of worriers, and I don't worry about much. And she just looks at me like I'm an alien, but she worries about everything and everybody, and I just don't care. Things that are out of my control. But why did you put that quote in front of me this morning? I love it.
Well, because one of my, you know, going out on your own, which I've been since 2013, one of the things that I'm really kind of a shy person. So I, once I break the ice, I'm really kind of really good at it. I kind of like warm up real fast, but I was always worried about rejection.
Yeah.
What if he says no?
Yep.
Well, and then worried about somehow that was going to be terrible, right?
Yeah.
I wasn't going to live to see the next breakfast or something.
Yeah.
But it hit me that through my prior experience before I even got into law, I was in sales for a while, and I found out he was right. 99% of the time, the things you worry about just never happen. So why make that an impediment to what you're trying to do?
Yeah. Another one I heard, I listened to a great podcast called The Happiness Lab, and I just gave it to my wife because I think it would help her. Not that she's not happy or that I'm not happy, but it's just really interesting the things that they talk about. And there was a piece specifically on the fact that all that effort and time and worry over things that are not at your control, if you just say to yourself, is this going to matter to me next week? So like something went down with my teenager. To me, it seems like a big deal today, but is this really going to matter next week, next month, in a year? Am I ever even going to think about it again? The answer to that question is mostly no. So I think that falls right in line with Dale Carnegie's quote and your experiences. Denny, welcome to the show. Welcome to Be That
Thank
Lawyer. You have become that lawyer, right? So I think it's really
I hope so. Yeah.
I hope so.
It's my second go round in career, so it better work.
Well, we're going to hear all about your background in a minute, but currently you are the founder of Windy City Trial Group, which doesn't sound like something in Arizona, but I guess you're playing both sides of the fence there.
We are. And the funny part about it is I have a couple of clients who are located out here, and I said, you know, I'm moving out to Phoenix. Guys think I'm thinking of changing it to like Windy City West,
yeah,
kind of like, you know, Taliesin West, like with Frank Lloyd Wright. And they said, have you lost your mind? Do you know how many people in Chicago have moved to Arizona?
Oh yeah. It's like Florida. It's like half the population.
So I just stayed with it.
Awesome. And you, Windy City people. So there are people listening to this podcast all over the country. And I wonder if they know why Chicago is called the Windy City. Do you?
That's a trivia question, isn't it?
Do you want to share that answer? Do you know
sure.
the answer?
Sure. It has nothing to do with the wind, as in the weather. It has to do with, I believe, somebody from the New York Post or the New York Times back a long, long time ago, turn of the century, was talking about the blowhards of the city council.
It was the witty city politicians.
Exactly.
Yeah.
That's where it comes from.
Now, do we have some wind in Chicago? The answer is yes. We do have some great wind in Chicago, but that's not how it got named the Windy City. So you guys, if you had nothing out of the show today, Denny and I have no value to offer you whatsoever. You got the reason why it's the Windy City. All right. Denny, thanks so much for being on the show, man. It's so good to see you again. I thought our initial conversation, like our pre-interview call, was fantastic. And kind of you're living the dream of what a lot of solos are wanting to do and like how they want their life to be. And so I want to hear about your background. And then I want to get into the weeds on kind of like, how can someone that struggled with business development and marketing turn that corner? And I think that's going to be a really engaging and inspiring story. But let's go back to your background, because I think you actually have a sales background. Is that correct?
A little bit of one. Yeah. I started out as an engineer. That's my undergrad training. And I was an engineer for a while. And then I went into sales, selling machine tools because I bought one of them and then I ended up selling them.
There you go.
So then the manufacturing market took a huge downturn in the 90s. And so I had always thought about law school, but just never thought I was smart enough, couldn't do well enough in the LSAT. But I just decided to give it a shot just to see what would happen. Well, I got in. I went to law school at Chicago Kent at night. And of course, when I got out of undergrad, there was a recession. When I got out of law school, there was a recession. So my joke is, if I'm trying to change careers, you better find out what it is, because there's a recession coming. So I kicked around doing some contract work. I mean, literally going through documents. I hooked on with a small firm guy who was almost a solo, just a couple of people. And he needed some help with trade secrets. And it so happened I had added class in trade secrets in law school. And that's kind of where it started. I went to a bigger firm, and then they went through a downsizing in 2013. And I'm sitting there, I'm 45 years old, and this is my second career. And now what do I do? So I just decided that would be the time to hang the shingle, see what happens.
Okay. Yep. And so there was a Be That Lawyer tipping point that you shared with me of the difference between going solo and having a law practice, and then ultimately where you are now. So can you talk to that change?
Well, I guess, again, I hope I know where you're going with this. The change that made it successful for me was going back to a very old sales thing that I was taught years ago. I think I told you earlier, my very first job as an undergrad was selling insurance door to door, trying to figure out how to get into.
You told me that, but you didn't tell the audience that. Now they're hearing that. They're going, oh boy, that guy,
right. I hated that.
Yeah.
That's why this whole 99% that I hated that.
Yeah.
And so, but he did say to me one thing that I really stuck with me: plan your work and work your plan. So if I was going to make this successful, the only way I felt that was going to be the first way I was going to be successful at all was to get business in. I could do all the other planning and marketing plans and all this other stuff, but if I don't have people coming in the door and paying me money, all of that's just expenses.
Yeah.
So I had to come up with a consistent plan and execute it all the time.
Yeah. I would say too that there was a fear of rejection that I had, certainly with girls in high school and a little bit in college. I think lubricating my brain helped a little bit, but ultimately, I didn't want to be let down. I didn't want to take that risk, and I didn't want to be let down. And geez, I wish I had gone through some additional, sales training, for to help me in high school with the girls. But that didn't exist, and it still doesn't. Thank God, I guess. But getting to a no, like the old Steve Fretzen, the old sales guy Steve Fretzen, coming up in sales and working for Yellow Pages and high tech and franchises, the last thing I ever wanted to hear was a no. In fact, most of the sales training I went through was how to handle the objection of no. When someone says, no, I'm not interested, I would have 5 or 10 different ways of working them over, if you will, to get them to eventually come to my side of thinking. And I think while that was somewhat effective in the 80s and the 90s, I think today that would just upset people and turn people off. So I actually build it into my strategy of sales-free selling, where I tell people up front. So Denny, if I'm talking to you about my services, for example, hey, if we feel like there's a fit and a synergy and a desire to proceed forward, let's continue the dialogue. If you or I don't feel that it's a fit, We should be very comfortable telling each other no and saying it's okay and moving to that type of an outcome, because ultimately it'll save us both a lot of time and follow through that's unnecessary. Mm-hmm. Are you okay with that? Getting someone to agree.
What you also have to keep in mind though, Steve, is in that scenario, you're trying to convince them that you have a service that they want. On the other hand, you have to decide if you want to work with that person.
Yes, it's a two-way street.
One of the things I learned very early in my career here was when that first sale wasn't there, there's such a temptation that, boy, I don't have a good feeling about this, but boy, he's got a check, you know?
Yeah.
Boy, that's a mistake.
Yeah. You can take the check and take the check and run and deposit it before it can get turned.
One of the biggest things I ever learned that I learned while doing this as a solo that I wasn't expecting was the most important thing I learned to do was say no to them.
Yeah.
I didn't feel it was a good fit.
Yeah.
Because my gut has almost never been wrong. When I have that pit in my stomach, this guy's going to pay me. I don't know if this is going to be a good relationship. He's going to be looking over my shoulder every 5 minutes. I can't work like that. And if that's the kind of person he's going to be, I should walk away from it, regardless of whether he's got a check in his hand.
Well, it's counterintuitive because if you're, let's say, you know, not hitting the numbers that you want to hit, you're not bringing in the business that you'd like to as a lawyer, it's hard to consider turning away a check. And I'm not suggesting that you have to. You just have to weigh out the pros and the cons. But if you can get to the point where you go, you know, look, I know I need that $5,000 or that $10,000, but it's going to take so much away from my other clients. It's going to take away from my business development activities because this is someone who's going to be bugging me, needy, just, you know, desperate client who's and may not ultimately pay me. So there's so many, you got to really look at that. Yeah.
As you go along and you learn to say no, and then you spend your time getting better clients, and you know the plan works because you've been doing it consistently. Like, for example, when I first started out, the first year, I probably averaged a new client per quarter. But the plan was working. A new client per quarter paid for everything, you know, that I was doing up to that point. It was break even for me to get a new client because all I do is litigation. And usually that's not, you know, something you do over 2 weeks.
Yeah.
It's over several months. So when you realize that the plan works, you feel better about saying no to somebody.
Yeah, for sure. So let's talk about the switch between practicing the law and growing a law practice. And so what are the main struggles that you had and that you see other lawyers having as it relates to the balance and making that, turning that corner of just billing hours versus building business? How did you do that? And then what do you see are the challenges that other lawyers have?
A couple of ways. One is overhead and one is just sales. As far as sales go, it's a separate activity. It has to be planned. It has to be consistent. For me, I'm a morning person. So my big high energy to do what I don't really want to do, which is try to sell, is execute the plan between 1 and 2 hours every morning.
Yeah.
And then once I'm done with it, because it's a plan and I know it works, I don't have to wait. I don't have to take all day. I'll just take those 2 hours. When I'm done with those 2 hours, I will move on to practicing law.
Yeah.
But building the business and practicing law are not mutually exclusive.
There's a book out there,
Denny,
I interrupted you. Go.
Sorry. No, unless you're an associate and all you do is take your paycheck. And of course, that means you work weekends and whatever. If you're a partner in the firm, one guy I went to school with said, I congratulate him on being a partner. He says, I said, so what does that mean? He says, that just means to do the same work before, but now they want me to bring in business too.
Yeah. Oh, a lot of lawyers going through that. A lot of lawyers. Yeah. I finally made partner. Great. Now you've got your workload and you now have to go bring in business. There's a book out there. It's a Brian Tracy special, but I think it's called Eat That Frog or Eat the Frog. Mm-hmm. It's essentially saying like there's something nasty and disgusting that you have to do during the day. It might be sales. It might be having to go try to like drum up business. Do it first. Get rid of it. Knock it out. Send out five. You know, it's not that scary and sick, actually. It's sending out some emails to set up some meetings, to set up some coffee, some Zooms, whatever. Get those five emails out early in the morning, okay? And then the rest of the day is easy. If you eat the frog first, the rest of the day is going to seem like a breeze.
I totally believe that.
Eating a frog.
I agree with that totally.
But I'm seeing a lot of lawyers who are overwhelmed by the bill of hour. I'm seeing a lot of lawyers that are not delegating properly their time management. They're just letting their inbox control their day. And someone's listening going, yeah, what do you, yeah, that, of course. Well, how else should I do it? Well, that's what all the time management people are talking about now, is how to run your day, how to, as you said, plan your day versus just having a day. Something people have heard me say is, did you have the week or the week have you? And it's the same, right? It's the same kind of commentary. So what, how do lawyers, how did you, and maybe, you know, you're coaching now a little bit, how do lawyers better plan their day and execute on a day where they can get their work done and also do the BD that they're maybe dreading?
Well, you know, at some point, you're just going to have to look yourself in the mirror and say, this is what I have to do. You had Leslie Wallerstein on not long ago.
I just saw her 20 minutes. I was just hanging out with her 20 minutes ago, Denny.
Did you really? Okay.
Yeah.
So Leslie, if you've heard that podcast, which is excellent, it's very much the same thing. Like, this is a struggle for me. I have to do this. I know I have to do this to make the business work, but how do I do it? And I think the issue is you've got to absolutely plan it in advance and then you have to execute. You know, the old saying is like an 80% plan, 100% executed is better than 100% plan. It's 80% executed. So you've got to get out there and you've got to actually execute. You can sit down and by yourself, especially if you're an introvert type person, you can sit in your little cocoon all day long and come up with all these plans. Yeah. But if you don't execute any of them, it's just paper.
Yeah.
Did you know that 36% of potential clients would take their business elsewhere if they had a bad call experience? Roll out the red carpet for your callers and website visitors with experienced and professional MoneyPenny receptionists. Our awesome team, super powered by technology, will get to know your business inside out so they can answer calls and respond to web chats exactly as if part of your team. Start your free trial by quoting the name Fretson and get started today with MoneyPenny.
With the help of Practice Panther, our office is more efficient than ever. We now provide an even higher level of service to our clients.
I've collaborated with Practice Panther for years, and I'm always hearing from happy customers just like that one. Practice Panther wants to save you up to 8 hours every week, and I want to save you money. All my listeners can get an exclusive discount, 50% off your first 3 months. Learn how your firm can boost productivity with automated workflows, custom intake, and native e-payments by visiting practicepanther.com/bethatlawyer to discover more and claim this deal.
Legalese Marketing is not your traditional marketing vendor. Instead, we're a true fractional CMO that helps you save time and spend your money the right way to build the practice of your dreams. We help through the entire process, from customizing your intake system to driving leads and even getting more reviews afterwards. Schedule your free call at legalesemarketing.com.
And so let's talk about this in two parts. So we've got the plan. I've got some specific things that I think should go into a plan. What goes into your plan? What is your plan actually saying to you that's helpful to you in then executing?
Well, my plan says, this is what we're going to accomplish this week or today. Okay. And this is the average amount of contacts I need to make. And I'm going to do this before anything else happens, before I turn on the computer, before I look at my emails. Here's what's going to happen. It's going to happen from 8 a.m. to 9:15 today. Yeah. Because I think this is how long it's going to take. And when I'm done at 9:15, it's time to go work on something else. What's that something else? The other thing is, what's my next plan to execute for the day as a lawyer? Because I think a lot of lawyers can get down a rabbit hole, do something really comfortable, and then avoid the stuff that's not.
Right.
And yet, like, very much the same as sales. If you've got a difficult client, for example, and you're about to send him a bill that's twice as big than he was expecting, that's a tough call.
Yeah. Well,
because the first thing he's going to ask you for is a discount, and you don't want to do that.
Right.
So there are things like that, that even as a lawyer, you can set your day up for the tough things to happen first. And I would suggest, now for me, it's morning. Because as I told you, that's my big energy level.
Yeah.
At 3 o'clock in the afternoon, I'm on the third cup of coffee, and I got to find something like some CLE or something I can
snooze to. Less brain work.
Right. But find out where that energy is in your day.
Okay.
Because that's when you're going to be most productive. And that's where you schedule the stuff that's tough to do.
Yeah. The thing that I work with lawyers on every day on planning is, A, where's the low-hanging fruit? Where's the business coming from, or could it come from, that you either enjoy where it's coming from, or you know it's easy? So client introductions and referrals, existing lawyers that you have a relationship with and getting back together with them. those are all going to be far easier to execute on than attending a new networking event or coming up with a speaking engagement that you now have to promote and try to figure out where you're going to present that, you know, what type of group and getting in the door doing that. So it's like there's all this, it's like there's a triangle, and at the bottom is where all the space is. That's the really hard stuff to do. That's all, like, you know, from cold calling all the way to networking to whatever. Then at the top of the pyramid, there's going to be stuff that's lower hanging fruit, takes less time with a greater return. So I'm always trying to push my clients to figure that out and only go down the pyramid when we've run out of stuff at the top. You know, that's the 80, more about maybe like the 80-20 rule. Yeah, prioritizing. Yeah. Coming up with what those people, who those people are, what those activities are, where they're going to produce the best results in the least amount of time. That's always kind of my game plan for a client versus, you know, let's do everything.
Right. Well, doing everything is also a big mistake.
Well, let's get into that, because that now we're moving to execution. So you write up a plan, you figure out low hanging fruit, figure out what you enjoy. That's all fine. Now you actually have to go do it. And so what are some of the things that you have found to be successful for you? Morning, obviously, is super helpful.
Well, actually, I'm going to go a little different route maybe on you.
Okay, go for it.
When I first decided I was going to thinking about, you know, hanging the shingle, because when we went through this downsizing, my firm was very nice to me. I worked for like 3 months transitioning things out, kept my office, kept my salary, you know, no hard feelings. This is just what we're going to do. So I had a very good opportunity to kind of sit back and figure out, what do people around me do that I think are really cool or really smart, and things that are really stupid?
Mm-hmm.
Letting your AR get too big.
Your
account receivable will get too big. Trying to do everything yourself. I had one lawyer, I told you, he was doing his accounting. He was doing his banking. He was doing everything. And by the way, he's putting in 12 to 16 hour days because he still do about 8 hours with the law work in order to pay for all that stuff.
Yeah.
So I learned very early on, I got a banker. I got an accountant who has still been with me now 10 years.
Yep.
And they do all of the bookkeeping, the accounting, the taxes, the banking. I let somebody else worry about that.
Yeah.
I have a banker. I have an accountant. I have a tax guy. So, and I even have a lawyer. For that. Then when I set up my firm, I was like, I don't know how to set up a firm. I'm not going to spend hours and hours trying it and then still not getting it right. So I called an old law school buddy who does that. He said, how much? I said, you said $1,500. I said, I'm sending you a check. That's how it worked.
Yeah.
Because at my bill rate, $1,500, I'm going to be working at minimum wage by the time I figure out how to do that.
Yeah. So I think what we're saying is that there are people that we need to lean on, you know, trust but verify, but we need to lean on the basics. Who's going to do our numbers? Who's going to send us that P&L every month to make sure that we have our numbers and we've got, who's sending out invoices? It shouldn't be us. Okay. There are people that do that. The big one that's come out into the forefront, Denny, too, has been VAs. VAs in South America, VAs in the Philippines, VAs that are charging $8 to $12 an hour. And they're doing a lot of the marketing. They're doing a lot of the admin. They're paralegals. They're whatever. But they're able to assist us and take tremendous amounts of tedious administrative and marketing burden off of our plates. That's been a huge benefit to the legal community in the last couple of years.
Well, and just to go to show you that you've got to constantly keep learning. I just ended up with a new marketing system where I don't need to promote who it is, but they have a system of putting my contacts in for me, setting up schedules for mailers, and they also do content.
Yeah.
One of the things I talked about with people for a long time was like, how do you lawyers have all these blogs and all this stuff and still do law every day? I mean, I started doing blogs. I'm like, this is too much work.
Yeah.
I can't do this. And then I find out they hire people to do, they still do the edit and final approval of what goes out, but they're not writing that themselves.
No.
No.
There's so many different, you know, from Upwork to agencies that help you to get like Legalese, right? So Legalese, you know, they're helping put out all my podcast episodes go on my website, the graphic design for that. They've got my newsletter going out consistently. They've got emails going out for me consistently. They've got my social media. People think I'm some kind of social media, you know, maven. I'm not. I mean, I am producing a ton of content, but they're the ones that are actually putting it on social for me with the blurb and everything else.
Right.
And so it saves me so much time and energy And I like to think that lawyers and I have something in common. We're charging a premium for a high level of service. And there's a lot of things at the $10 to $30 an hour range that we're doing that we should absolutely not be doing. And we just need to make a list of those things and start talking to our friends and listening to my show or whatever it is to get the resources in place to not have to spin our wheels doing that kind of crap.
Well, let me tell you how this worked too. I just, because I've tried all kinds of plans, right?
Yep.
Doing it all myself. I found these people. I really like what they do. It's not cheap, but you know, like you said, at the $30 an hour level, why am I doing it?
Yeah.
But in terms of keeping in touch, and because I only do litigation. So the only time anybody's going to be thinking about Denny S for a referral is somebody got sued or they got, it's a practice area they don't do, send it over to Denny. Well, I've got like, in LinkedIn, I've got like 769 contacts that I don't ever keep up with.
Yeah.
Because I can't. Now I have a system. I have the contacts in the system. I have content created. I'm already out through January. I already, already know what's going to happen.
Nice.
And so, and I don't even have to do it because we set it up on a schedule.
Right.
It goes out automatically.
Yeah. That's it. So content calendar, just as an example, another thing, you know, a marketing agency can do, and you can help produce content or not, but you know, those posts are going out every day, every week, every month through January for you. Okay. So do I. And it's like one less thing to worry about. And it's something that you know is helping build your brand. It's helping build your, you know, your notoriety in your space. But it's not something you need to do.
Right. That's a very big lesson. Could be the biggest one.
Yeah.
I think with a lot of, if you have ever went down that road, tried to do everything yourself, you are going to fail. I don't see any way around it.
Yeah.
I couldn't do it. I had all the sales training and all that stuff, but running a business, you got to have people that know what they're doing, that do it all the time. And it's like I said to people, I said, can you do a real estate closing? Well, yeah, but it cost you $5,000. Why? I don't know how to do it. You have to learn how. It's not my thing. Now, if it's a copyright case, I know that part of the law, like the back of my hand. So yeah, I could draft a complaint in an hour if I needed to. But that's why you charge the rate you charge, right? Because you have all this knowledge and you don't have to go look it all up. So finding out what you're good at and what you're not, some people just can't let go. Some people are going to want to do all their own banking or whatever. And if that's what makes you happy, I guess that's fine. But keep in mind that that's not paying bills. That's not revenue coming in. That's expenses going out, whether it's your time or somebody else's.
Yeah. I think that the final point, and you and I talked about this in our pre-interview, is, you know, one way to stay consistent with business development is to find in particular one thing that really works for you and, you know, test it, try it, A/B test, you know, but work at it. And if it's working and it's actually driving in business and everything, lean into it and own it and make it more of what you do. And I think you have one thing that you're doing that's really working and paying off dividends. I've got a number of things I'm doing, but I stay hot and heavy on them to ensure that, you know, I don't have to go in and attend some random networking event or start cold calling or things like that. So talk about that, finding the one thing that works for you and sticking with it.
I think the answer to the question is, well, my marketing thing, my sales thing is contacting people who have recently gotten sued.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of rules, by the way. I can't just pick up the phone and call them.
Right.
It's actually an ethical violation for me to pick up the phone and say, hey, you just got sued, unless you're a lawyer. So I have to contact them basically through mail or email. And there are rules of what has to be said, attorney advertising on the envelope, attorney advertising in the subject matter. But that was the plan I was starting with, the introvert that I am. I tried the networking thing. I wasn't getting any business out of that. So I just said, I'm going to try this plan. We'll see how it works. Key was, I almost gave up, Steve. I almost gave up. It was like 3 or 4 months before I had one client with me, and there wasn't much left to bill on it because it was a motion for summary judgment. And for the lawyers out there, that just means the judge is going to take his time to figure out what to do. So there was nothing to do. So I really had a client, but not really any revenue. And so I started doing these letters, and it took me 4 months to get the first one.
Yeah.
So I was doing 3 to 5 letters a day, every day, 5 days a week. And it still took me 4 months to get something to happen.
Right.
But once it started happening, I was tweaking the letter. I'm not getting a response. Maybe I should say it this way. Maybe I should try something else. But then once I found it, like you said, hammer it.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, it may be that you get rejected or that something doesn't work, but as long as you feel or believe or know that there's potential there and you keep tweaking it and improving it and testing it and making sure that the return is getting better, that could be asking clients for introductions or improving your networking acumen, whatever it is that you feel like you have the ability to do well with. You just have to keep making it better, and then you start seeing results, and then you can double down, triple down on it.
Yep, so exactly.
Really good stuff. Denny, your game-changing book for our show is, we're back to Dale Carnegie. So we like Dale Carnegie from the quote, and now we've got him back. How to Win Friends and Influence People, which is like the, quintessential, book on business development or how to, live a better life through relationships, right?
Yep, exactly. In fact, as I talked to before the start of the show, when you asked me what the favorite book, business development book was, I hadn't read it in years.
Yeah.
It was long old sales training from somewhere that I had the original book. So I went online at Amazon, and it's on sale right now for like $11.99.
There you go.
The book is back out in a new edition written by his daughter, where they basically upgraded some of the scenarios, but the speaking voice is still Dale Carnegie. And I'm about through the first couple of chapters, and it's just a reminder for me of all the things that I know I should know.
Yeah.
And again, and I'm not some guru that all of a sudden figured out, all of a sudden the light bulb went on. I'm still working on it.
Yeah.
I still have a book like this that I read to remind me of the things I know I should be doing. So does Denny get up every morning at 8 o'clock and always go do that? I wish that were true.
Yeah.
But Denny then doubles down and said, okay, tomorrow you've got to be on it, or you've got to make extra time somewhere. Denny, you're not working 8 hours today because you screwed up this morning. You screwed around drinking coffee and talking to your wife about politics for 2 hours.
Yeah.
And now you're behind. Well, got to make up for that. So it's not getting to some perfection and just cruising along. If you think you're going to get there, it's probably not going to happen. You're going to have to constantly keep improving yourself.
Well, in your defense, politics in Arizona, there's a lot to talk about.
There's a lot of that.
We won't get into it, but holy mackerel, there's a lot to talk about. Denny, thank you so much for being on the show, sharing your wisdom, your experiences. I think, there's a lot of individual lawyers, whether they're big firms or solos, that aren't really hitting the mark as it relates to a consistent performance in business development. I think that's really what you shared today that was so helpful. So I just want to tell you how much I appreciate you taking your time and sharing your wisdom.
Very good. Thanks.
Yeah. Hey, and thank you everybody for spending some time with Denny and I today. Opportunities to consider, what are you doing? What's working? What's not? How targeted are you? Do you have a plan? Are you executing on the plan? If not, why not? How do we get back to the basics of making business development a consistent part of our legal careers, because that's what's going to end up paying the dividends, or not only initially, but over time. And it's something that you have to work. So we can keep making better and smarter decisions, but it ends up being, resting on your shoulders, that you either are going to be consistent with business development and make that a part of your life or not. And obviously Denny and I are both on the just do it side, right, Denny?
Right.
There's no other way to be. So again, helping you try to be that lawyer, someone who's confident, organized, and a skilled rainmaker. Take care, everybody. Be safe. Be well. We'll talk again soon.
Thanks for listening to Be That Lawyer. Life-changing strategies and resources for growing a successful law practice. Visit Steve's website, fretson.com, for additional information and to stay up to date on the latest legal business development and marketing trends. For more information and important links about today's episode, check out today's show notes.